Welcome to our second segment of this afternoon's program. It's Sunday, the 6th of February, 2022. It is now 2:11 in the studio. I'm your host, Kieran Murdoch. Between the Prime Minister, Gaston Browne, and the Minister of State in the Finance Ministry, Lennox Weston, it was announced last week that the government planned to acquire and take over the Jolly Beach Resort. It says it is doing so after unsuccessfully searching for private investors ready and willing to get involved with the property. Talks with a handful of investors interested in buying the resort are said to have been underway for some time, and we have reported on those ongoing talks for some time. But it appears that the government was not convinced, for whatever reason, that the resources needed by those various investors that they may have been in discussions with to meet the cost of the property was actually available and there. The property, of course, is currently in receivership, and Jolly Beach Resort has been closed in terms of its operations for some time. It was being used for quarantining COVID persons coming in terms of, you know, whether or not you had COVID and you had to go into quarantine. It was being used for that for some time. Also announced was the intended takeover of the Kalalu Cay project at Morris Bay. The Kalalu Cay Resort, which was going to be dubbed the Waldorf Astoria Antigua, was to become a five-star sustainable luxury resort created by Al Karibi Antigua Development Limited, which was a joint venture company between Sheikh Tariq bin Faisal Al Qasimi of Dubai and the government of Antigua and Barbuda. However, ahead of Thursday's budget presentation, the Prime Minister revealed that the government had been making plans to take over the entire operation and is set to cancel the partnership, or is set, rather, to cancel the partnership. So on this segment, we ask, what are the risks the government is taking to rescue both Jolly Beach and Kalalu Cay, and could it be worth the benefit? We have joining us on this panel, businessman and community activist, Mr. Elijah James. He joins us on Zoom. Good afternoon to you, Mr. James. How are you doing?
Hey, good afternoon, Kieran. Good afternoon to all the listeners and viewers.
And we have as well with us Mr. Greg Phillip. He is CEO of Nevis Sun Tours. It's a tour operator and destination management company in St. Kitts and Nevis. He's also a former CEO of the Nevis Tourism Authority, and he's author of the book, The Truth About Early Birds and Worms, How Travel Businesses Survive and Thrive After COVID-19. Happy to have him with us on Zoom as well. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Greg Phillip.
Good afternoon, and how are you?
Quite well, quite well. I cannot complain, and I shall not complain. Mr. Elijah James, I wonder if I could begin with you. Really and truly, the object of this very short discussion this afternoon is to just get some reaction to this. It is a significant announcement that the government would seek to go it alone, basically, in terms of Jolly Beach and in terms of Kalalu Cay. Now, whenever the government gets involved in heavy investment in projects, there's also a number of questions that come up, whether or not it's too great of a risk, whether or not it's something that's better suited for the private sector. In this instance, we have the government reporting that it had been in discussions with persons for some time, but was not satisfied that those persons, from what my understanding from what Senator Weston said, was that they could really pony up the money. And now we've heard as well in the budget that the method of investing in these projects, Jolly Beach Resort takeover, as well as the Kalalu Cay initiative, is to raise money through, I think, bonds on some manner of European stock market, or a bond, rather. What's your initial impression of this announcement? Is it something that you saw coming? Because we did see the whole discussions with investors thing, particularly for Jolly Beach, being drawn out for quite a while. Is it something you saw coming? Did it come as a surprise? How would you answer those two questions at least?
Okay, sure. Thank you, Kieran. Well, it didn't come as a surprise to me. And it's just kind of following a lot of how the manner in which the government goes about seeking its investments. Now, there's several considerations that we have to also keep in mind. One being the fact that Jolly Beach itself is the largest all-inclusive property in Antigua and Barbuda in terms of roughly 3 stars below in terms of what persons would look on to basically fill the back of the plane for many properties in Antigua. As you may or may not know, Antigua and Barbuda is seen as a mid to high-end destination. All you have to do is take a look, go to any search engine and look at our booking room rates here in Antigua and Barbuda, and you realize that for persons who make Antigua and Barbuda their choice destination, they're paying quite a considerable sum of money per night to stay within Antigua and Barbuda. And so even though there's some persons who will only fly on first class in, when it comes to planes. And so for, as the government has more than one occasion publicly announced, they need to ensure that the plane itself, the back end of the plane, is also filled with passengers to make it worthwhile for even the airlines to be able to come to Antigua and Barbuda. So that was one of the considerations that you have to keep in mind. And I know the Prime Minister would have mentioned back in some of the articles that you have shared about the fact that even when they started conversations with Calvin Air, for example, the reason why they couldn't go forward with him wasn't necessarily because there wasn't any resources, but because he was looking at downsizing what Jolly Beach was moving from. About, you know, Jolly Beach, as I remember, is about 460 something rooms, I think they call it 500, to about 100 to focus on high-end clients. But from the government's perspective, they also looking at it from more than likely the negotiation standpoint from the airlines, ensuring that they have rooms to be able to ensure that they get the flights and secure the you know, the traffic to Antigua and Barbuda, because that hasn't still remains a big problem. We actually, the last time I checked through the tourism statistics, we don't have enough rooms. We actually need more rooms in Antigua and Barbuda, and not just high-end rooms, but rooms within the lower-end category, so that we can ensure that the airlines you know, meet with the airlift to get people here. So it wasn't a surprise to me. I saw that coming. The one with Kalaluke as well, that was a bit of a surprise to me at all, given the amount of, I don't want to call it, say, the drama around the whole project itself, but even the way which it was structured. And if you go to Kalaluke.com and you saw it was also kind of touted as a CIP investment approach. And after, as you know, the pandemic hit and whatnot, that was the end of that. A lot of persons started reevaluating investments. Antigua and Barbuda isn't necessarily the most cheapest place to run a business, as I can tell you hands on. But what we see happening here, I was not surprised seeing it. But at its end of the day, still, the government has considerations that it has to make. That it would have basically flexed its muscles around to be able to where it, to that brought it to where it is right now, literally.
Mr. Greg Phillip, I wonder if I could get some feedback from you on that issue of filling up the back of the plane, which is a term that has been used quite often in terms of when we talk about Jolly Beach specifically as a resort that has a large room capacity and comes in at a lower cost for visitors than some of the more very, very high-end resorts that we have here in Antigua and Barbuda. How important is it that a country does have a broad product offering that they can cater to more persons, all persons really, depending on what sort of price range they're looking for in terms of their vacation?
I think it's quite important, though, for one thing, and the great point that Elijah made is that airlines make decisions where to fly and how often to fly based on the potential for business. And part of what they look at as potential for business is, number one, the number of actual hotel rooms within a destination. And then we're thinking about, well, who are they carrying? Yes, there's actually a fact too that the reality is that airlines make most of their money from the people sitting in the front of the plane. But it doesn't mean that the seats at the back of the plane are insignificant to their earnings and their profitability. So in that case, yeah, it's quite important, especially for destinations in the Caribbean, to pay attention to that. Here in St. Kitts and Nevis, here we skew mostly on the high end part of things, but the reality is when we look at occupancy rates for hotels, oftentimes it is the hotels at the lower end who have the higher occupancy rates, and therefore even for a destination itself, the having rooms at the lower end of tourism is quite important, because of course you're providing jobs, but not beyond that. I mean, you're providing opportunities for a wider variety of people to come and visit your destination.
Now, of course, I'll come back to Mr. Elijah James. A lot of people get a little concerned with the government saying it's going to get involved in this operation. I don't know in what way it will do so, whether in terms of simply taking share ownership in the current company that runs, for instance, Jolly Beach, or using perhaps the National Asset Management Company to do so. I don't know. They haven't been that many details expressed about this. It's just an initial announcement. But we are in the midst of a pandemic. The government is cash strapped. There are a lot of demands on the government in terms of its financing. And so many people raise an eyebrow wondering whether or not it's worth it in order to, as I say, go it alone in trying to keep these projects ongoing. What do you think in terms of the risk there?
Okay, so I'll, and rightfully so, persons are concerned because of the past experiences, watching how government generally hands anything, especially that is within or operates within the private sector, case in point being the issue with the app, for example. And we've had experiences with our governments, administrations past, where we would have had, for example, Royal Antigua and Barbuda, that was the Royal Antigua hotel property that is now the Royalton, that was managed by government. And the same concern most persons have when it comes to government officials or government being involved in business like that is generally there are two main concerns. One, the exploitation or abuse of you know, privileges, whereby, you know, persons used to complain about the fact that ministers used to exploit the fact that they have access to the property, they don't pay bills. And secondly, having to do with, like, a lot of times when it comes to upholding certain standards, once government is involved, the minister or the government officials tend to turn blind eyes to standards, and then they kind of run things into the ground, and then afterwards try to pick up the pieces. Perfect example of something like this is we would have seen, for example, a change in the standards when government handed over Heritage Key, for example, to private management, Global Ports. And you note, you can, it's like a night and day kind of shift difference. And I've sat in meetings with governments and the ministers, and they've all acknowledged this very problem that they all have. And, it's my constituents and people working. And a lot of times they basically affect a lot of rules or acts or relax a lot of standards when it comes to that. But if you want to build a successful business, especially if you're in the hospitality space, you need to have high standards and maintain them, because that's what a lot of guests and even for the sake of operation and cash flow is required. Now, when you think about it in terms of the risk side of it, I do believe, of course, that, again, given the importance of Jolly Beach as a back of the plane property for Antigua and Barbuda to ensure that we have the destination coming in here, it's always a danger. We've spoken about it for years. We've been lamenting this since I was a kid growing up. I've been hearing this conversation about the fact that we are too heavily invested in tourism. We do not diversify enough. Even the last of the panelists that were on spoke about the fact that, you know, agriculture is still a very big and potential market for us, and manufacturing, et cetera. But on a whole, the concerns that people have when it comes to government going into this kind of business, of course, is very much warranted because of the, again, the past experiences we've seen, and, you know, even how things have progressed and played out with Liat, and even before when we had Royal Antigua. So, I expect these concerns to be very valid.
Mr. Greg Phillip, let me bring you in at this point to ask you for that, your feedback on that as well. A government in the midst of a pandemic, cash strapped, having to deciding to get involved in this way.
You have some serious considerations or processes that you need to put in place to ensure success.
Excellent. Mr. James, I'll just let you know, I started speaking because your audio had cut out for a moment there. But we got the gist of what you're saying, and then you came in at the back end, so it's all right. But I, if you heard me speaking, it was because you cut out, and not that I was trying to cut you off. Mr. Greg Phillip, just to get your feedback on, your thoughts of the risk-benefit of, government getting involved to keep these projects alive, keep this property alive, but at the same time, in a situation where cash strapped in the midst of a pandemic. I'll also ask you to touch a bit on the points. I know that usually when you're on this program, you often speak to the issue of domestic investment in the tourism sector and a more capitalistic approach. It's interesting that we had not been able to get the government, I should say, had not been able to get the what it would have considered the right investors or the makeup of right investors to do what it wanted in terms of the Jolly Beach property. What do you think about that?
Well, I go back to this, that COVID-19 has really been a great inflection point. I mean, it's a definite point where we could look at all sectors of our economies and recognize that this is a point of change. And the fact that some businesses within many industries, but specifically, let's speak specifically to tourism, that many of them are struggling and some have gone out of business. In some cases, I think there are opportunities in that, and perhaps that's what the Antigua government is looking at. And I mean, I'm not necessarily in a position to say whether or not it's wrong or right specifically, based on what the Antiguan government is doing. But what I will say that perhaps this is a chance to change things, to look at the general direction of tourism and shift that. And when I say shift the general direction of tourism, we have to consider where we are in Caribbean tourism. Yes, we speak so much about the fact that there needs to be diversification. I'll say this, while we hear that in the conversation specific to Antigua, these are conversations that are even happening in St. Kitts and Nevis. And I always say this, yes, we have to diversify our economies, but while we talk about diversification and we include travel and tourism in it, let us realize too that there are opportunities for us to diversify within the actual tourism industry. So all of our diversification should not be for us to diversify away from tourism, but let us pay attention to how we can diversify tourism. Now, in speaking of that, let's consider ownership and ownership of many of the significant businesses in tourism, like hotels, for example. You realize that, the reason, and the reason that why I always speak of this specific point, the great disparity between local investment in tourism and foreign investment in tourism is because of the impact of it. We do not get to keep enough of the tourism dollar in the Caribbean. And that's reality. I mean, I've spoken in the past too about data out there that has shown that something like up to 80% or 80 cents of every single tourism dollar spent in the Caribbean leaves the Caribbean. A big part of the reason why it leaves the Caribbean is because we as Caribbean people do not own businesses, the significant businesses which make most of the money in Caribbean tourism. We do not own them, we do not control them. In some cases, we barely manage any of them. So when there are opportunities and where changes can happen, it's not to limit foreign investment because we need that. It is to pay attention to how we as Caribbean people actually interact within tourism. And when I say interact within tourism, I'm speaking about the actual business of tourism. How are we doing business within tourism? Do we have aspirations to be more significant players? And if we do, then it is time for us to take opportunities like these for increased local investment, for increased local ownership, because that is how we're going to grow. And that's how we're going to, in my view, make tourism in the Caribbean much more sustainable than it actually is.
Mr. Elijah James, what do you think about that, the issue of local investment? I mean, for instance, we saw a divestment in WEOC shares. And we saw, well, that was reported by WEOC as having been very successful, a number of local persons crowding in to take a share of that enterprise. But in terms of tourism, we usually see, of course, this requirement for a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars. And there may be only certain individual players in the local economy who could come together with that amount of money. How do you think we can better improve our domestic investment capacity? Do you think we can, or is that really just, you know, something that is too difficult?
So that's a great question, Kieran. And I want to throw two things on the table. I don't think that it's nuts. It doesn't require a situation where you have to have large sums of money to dive into tourism at all. And to get the at the core of it, something from the first the previous points we were just discussing, is that it's not that government, and people keep saying it, but you know, it's not a government, it's cash strapped. Government, just like any other individual person, when you look at it from a financial perspective, they have access to capital. They just need to, it's just the matter is, as we've seen with government time and time again, they find money for what they find is important, or, you know, they have a political will for. So it's not a situation where the government is cash strapped. I think it's just like how they just raised, because I think the Prime Minister would have reported that they had successfully raised the $200 million US dollars that they were looking to raise to go through for 2022 in terms of a lot of the capital investment projects that they have planned in the budget. The issue for me has to do with the lack of planning in Antigua and Barbuda. And believe it or not, when it comes to investments, most investors like to have an idea of what exactly the market or, you know, the investment they're going to be making, what are some of the considerations they need to take into mind. And as an Antiguan and Barbudan myself, it's very hard for me because I really don't know where is Antigua supposed to be in the next 5 to 10 years. You know, where's the government's head at? Because the last thing you want to do is to, again, I made the point earlier, Antigua is not a cheap place to operate in. When you look at the cost for us versus even some of our neighboring Caribbean countries, it's night and day. And so when somebody's making that decision to come to Antigua and Barbuda, whether for vacation, travel, or even general investment, there are a lot of considerations that have to be put in place. And right now, and for years, we have been operating almost like wake up, throw a dot at the board whenever, you know, a project or activity comes up, as opposed to having a laid out plan as to where we are. I've been in the tourism sector for well over 2 decades. And one of the things that I've learned in my career from a lot of the businesses, even the cruise ships, for example, when they're going to basically be putting investments into any territory, any location whatsoever, there's always a planned thought or process. And a lot of the investors, they even highlight the opportunities for investment. And you don't really find that here in Antigua and Barbuda, sadly. But to your question specifically about do our locals, as in Antigua and Barbuda business people, can they invest into Antigua and Barbuda? Absolutely. A lot of it also requires that, the government itself put certain policies in place to ensure that business is better accommodated, because there's still a lot of, since I was 15 years old, persons have been talking about the challenges in doing business in Antigua and Barbuda. 20 years later, nothing has changed. We've heard a conversation about having a one-stop shop for registration and ensuring the process is smooth and whatnot. And that still hasn't been done, administration after administrations. And these are some of the issues that, help to motivate investors or entrepreneurship among, you know, a society. And if we still haven't gotten some of the basics sorted out in Antigua and Barbuda, it will continue to be a hindrance for us as a people. And I know some of the Caribbean islands suffer from the same problem as well, but looking at our people here, it's something that we need to definitely overcome. So the government needs to put some plans in place. They need to highlight possible investment opportunities for people, just like if you're doing a development project, so people can see, okay, I have money, I want to do something, but I'm not quite sure what to do. Why don't you have a website or something that outlays all the opportunities and plans? So people can know, okay, these are all potential areas that you can invest in Antigua and Barbuda that the government may be looking for. We have a problem in our tourism product in terms of things to do. People talk about how boring Antigua can be at night times, and especially now with the pandemic and all the effects that we used to have before not happening. You know, where do people turn to, for entertaining themselves? There's no reason why our people can't come together, pool funds, and invest into potential projects within the sector, not just within tourism itself, but even other areas, because we are still very much, consuming a lot of imports, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing that's really stopping us, aside from just coming together and getting it done, for us to, start producing here and consuming what we produce.
Let me take the opportunity to give Mr. Greg Phillip the opportunity to, I just said opportunity twice, and now I've said it 3 times.
Yes.
Mr. Greg Phillip, if you could leave us with the final word, we're just about at the end of this segment.
Yeah, no problem. Elijah, they say that a partnership is a leaky ship. I assume you guys say that in Antigua.
Yeah, they like to say that.
Very much so.
Listen, part of our mindset in the Caribbean involves that when it comes to business. And yeah, when you talk about whether or not local people can actually invest in this great industry called tourism, the fact is, yeah, we need to do some of this thing together. The problem is that we still have that mindset. This partnership is a leadership issue, and we need to get past that and recognize that if this industry, which we depend on, if it's going to survive, and if it's really going to benefit us to its full potential, we have to do it together and recognize that there are great business opportunities within it for us to partake of.
With that, we can end this segment here. I want to say thank you to both our guests. The last voice you would have heard would be Mr. Greg Phillip. He is CEO of Nevis Sun Tours, which is a tour operator and destination management company based in St. Kitts and Nevis. He's also a former CEO of the Nevis Tourism Authority. We were joined as well, of course, right here in Antigua and Barbuda by businessman and community activist, Mr. Elijah James. We thank both of you for joining us this afternoon.